Counsel, how long would you like to reserve for rebuttal?
5 minutes, Your Honor.
All right. And you may begin, sir, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Dan Chai on behalf of Bartholomew Porter. The matter before the Court today hinges on whether the parties' conduct from the point that they exchanged vows for a marriage ceremony in D.C. until they departed from D.C. the following morning constitutes cohabitation, and we contend that it must. This is a case where we're asking the Court, obviously, to interpret D.C. law. Virginia, though it has barred common law marriage statutorily within the Commonwealth, does recognize common law marriages that take place
Counsel,
in other jurisdictions.
Counsel, I hate to stop you so early. It seems like part of your argument hinges on the word cohabitation.
Yes,
it does not seem that D.C. has actually interpreted from a common law marriage standpoint what cohabit means. But it has done so from a divorce standpoint, which indicates or implements sort of the suggestion of a sexual dynamic. What do we do in terms of reading it that way?
Well, Your Honor, I do agree with you that they haven't defined it from the lens of looking at it for common law marriage. It obviously comes up almost exclusively when you've got two parties divorcing. There is case law that I cited in my brief that suggests that sexual relations are not the only thing that we should be looking at, that when we're talking about whether parties are separated, if they have a continued sexual relationship, that counters the idea that they are, in fact, separated. And the case law in D.C. makes very clear that we shouldn't confuse the purely sexual side of a marriage with cohabitation alone.
But they seem to indicate that that is a factor that's to be considered for the definition of cohabitation.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. I don't think they're saying that it is that
cohabitation. I'm not saying it solely. I'm saying that it is a factor.
It's a factor that can be considered but is not required to be considered, Your Honor. You could certainly have circumstances where people either choose not to engage in sexual relations. They could be of an age or disposition where they elect not to. They could have a medical issue that prevents them from doing so, and that doesn't prevent people from cohabiting with one another.
It seems, as I read the case law, that cohabitation is not valued in and of itself, or for itself, if you will, but as a vehicle for establishing a nexus, a connection to the jurisdiction that recognizes common law marriage.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Would you perhaps comment on that in looking at our Virginia case of Kelder House?
Yes, Your Honor. I do think that the Kelder House case can be distinguished from the present case here.
Well, let me ask you to at least address it with respect to how they see cohabitation as, or how they see a nexus. I call it a nexus. I don't think that's the word in the case law. But the connection to the jurisdiction that might recognize common law marriage.
Yes, Your Honor.
There are a lot of jurisdictions that they refer to, and they quote a Kentucky case on the same issue, please.
Yes, Your Honor. So in terms of whether they require sort of a nexus, and this is what they talk about in Kelder House, that the sort of brief transitory nature of the party's contact with the two states that they're evaluating there, which are both Texas.
Contact is a word we can recognize in the law.
Right.
we know what that means, contact. Yes.
Sure. And the reason that they're doing it in those cases, yes, Your Honor, is not for the purposes of defining cohabitation, not deciding did they cohabit in this state for any period of time. What they're deciding in Kelder House is that in order to have held themselves out as a married couple, to establish their reputation as a married couple within those jurisdictions, they were not there for a sufficient period of time, Your Honor. And I would note that one of the reasons why I think we know that the Kelder House Court wasn't determining that is they didn't come out and say the parties needed to cohabit for X amount of time in these jurisdictions. They simply say that they were unable to establish their reputation for their marriage in those states.
I hear you, and I don't need to keep you on that issue, but the word contact has broader implications than did they hold themselves out. At the Kentucky case that Kelder House relies on, and there's yet another one, I think, in it from another state, they all talk about contact with the state.
They do, Your Honor, and that's in order to establish their reputation within the state. And the difference, the real distinction here, Your Honor, is that in those cases, there wasn't an agreement on whether they had there was a stated mutual present assent to be married.
And other elements weren't there.
Exactly. And so one of the ways in which you can prove that assent to be married is by what they call cohabitation. your statutory reputation by cohabitation. If you're known to be living together within that state, and what they were saying in both Texas and in Oklahoma is that the brief transitory nature where they simply, these are two people who are traversing the country, moving from Arizona to Virginia. They happen to stay in hotels in both Texas and Oklahoma on their way across. They don't do anything other than stop there, stay in a hotel, and be on their merry way. That's very different than in this case, where the parties specifically, I would say two things, ways that it's different. One, they very clearly had the assent to be married. That's not in question in our case, was in those cases. But if we're worried about whether there is a sufficient nexus between these people and the state, where as in Kelder House, they're really just traveling through. These people planned and went through an actual wedding ceremony in D.C., and that, to me, suggests a much more significant nexus.
What is your most determinative case? Which case would you think is the strongest in your favor, given Virginia law and cases that have already been relied on for Virginia law?
So in Virginia, Your Honor, I don't think that there is a...
Well, outside of Virginia.
There's the case that I cited in the Crane versus Poehler case in Maryland, and I think that really gets to the heart of the issue. What happens in that case, Your Honor, is that there's a couple who has been living in Maryland and believe themselves to have been married, as it turns out, for about 38 years by the time the husband in that case passes away. 8 years prior to them passing away, to the husband passing away, his brother passes away, and the two parties travel to Pennsylvania, which no longer has common law marriage, but at that time did. They are attending for a very specific purpose, a purpose that also includes holding oneself out as cohabiting as a married couple because they're there for a funeral. There's family, there's friends, and they're there for that specific purpose. They stay in a hotel for two nights in that case, and the Maryland case says we absolutely consider that to be cohabitation for the purposes of establishing a common law marriage. They even go out of their way to say, yes, they were there for 2 days. Our result would have been no different had they stayed only for one.
But counsel, I'm sorry. You can.
Help me, if you will, on, I guess, a choice of laws question. We're talking about common law marriage, which by very definition is not unique to one state or another. It is that body of law that crossed the Atlantic with the original colonists. And I note it with interest that in Clotterhouse, we're trying to determine common law marriage in Oklahoma, and we looked at a Kentucky case, for instance. Can we consider Virginia law as it defines or might help us determine what is, in fact, a common law relationship?
I don't believe that we can, Your Honor. I think that we have to look at what D.C. considers to be a common law marriage, much in the same way that if we were...
Why would D.C., if this is the common law, why would we care what D.C. thinks it is? Why wouldn't we care what Virginia thinks the common law definition is?
Well, Virginia has, perhaps I'm not following, Your Honor, and I apologize if that's the case, but Virginia has specifically banned common law marriage here. They've gone into the statute, the legislature has decided that they don't want it to exist.
We've delved into issues that have bearing on a common law marriage, such as cohabitation, and we've got cases that define cohabitation.
So, I'm sorry if I interrupted.
My point is I'm struggling to, and I'm not committed, I'm struggling to find where we go to determine what it takes for a couple to enter into a common law marriage. Even though Virginia doesn't recognize it, what would Virginia think the common law marriage would require?
I think that depends on in which jurisdiction you are saying the parties entered into a common law marriage.
Well, Judge Petty may be getting to something I've been mulling over just in listening to the argument. Is there something in our law that doesn't deal with marriage per se, but only inferentially, such as, I'll just give you, this is off the top of my head, a little bit on the limb there, but for example, looking at divorce, what is it that is... what happens in a divorce? What changes the status from marriage to non-marriage? what does the court look at before the court can say, this is enough of a fracture that marriage doesn't really exist anymore, and we can say that legally? I'll just give you one that came to my head. For example, you can get a divorce on the basis of desertion. So by implication, if you're going to take this route to what is marriage, aside from cohabitation, and aside from some other cases that have to deal with it, my circumventing the issue, but getting around it, well, commitment. This couple shows some evidence of longstanding commitment, notwithstanding the fact there was no legal marriage. The only other thing that came to mind is, this is much harder in a way. That's hard enough to kind of get there without anything affirmative to say. This is it. What about policy? What about public policy considerations? Are there any that should be considered within your position, both parties' position, on whether it is marriage or not? There probably are public policy positions. I don't know that we're in the position to deal with it, but if you have any that you want to share, please let me know.
I do, Your Honor, and I would point to the cases that I cited, and there's both a D.C. case and a Virginia case, which tells us that our goal is to presume marriage where we can find it.
Okay.
And part of the phrasing that they use is, we want to presume legitimacy when possible. We want to presume marriage, not concubinage.
Is that Virginia law or is that D.C. law?
There's actually similar law in both, Your Honor.
Yeah. Back to my original question, I go back to Clodderhouse. I mean, we're trying in Clodderhouse to discern a common law marriage in Oklahoma, and we're looking at definitions in Kentucky and Minnesota and Montana. I mean, we're going all over the country. So I have some question about your comment that we have to look to Washington, D.C. to determine whether this marriage exists.
So, Your Honor, to go back to that, the reason that we're looking at Oklahoma and Texas law in those particular cases is because those are the jurisdictions in which they stay.
Why are we looking at Kennedy, a Kentucky case, or why are we looking at the Supreme Court of Minnesota in Clodderhouse if we're trying to discern the marriage in Oklahoma or Texas?
I think what they're doing there, Your Honor, is acknowledging the fact that there isn't Virginia case law on the specific issues, and so they're looking at how other states have dealt with it. And that's why
we didn't look at Oklahoma specifically. We didn't limit our consideration to the law in Oklahoma.
I agree with you, yes, Your Honor, that they didn't limit it in terms of making their determination, but I don't know that it was clear that Oklahoma or Texas had clear case law on point in that either. I think this is one of those things where they know what the requirements generally are in Oklahoma. I don't think that there was a case on point, and I'll be candid, I obviously haven't read through all of Texas or Oklahoma case law.
It seems to me what we're doing here, what we need to be doing, is to decide what Virginia defines as common law marriage, even though we recognize that we know that Virginia does not recognize it. This is what it is, but we don't recognize
or
it.
Or marriage.
And I would respectfully disagree with you on that. Just as we would be, if the parties had engaged in a proper ceremonial marriage where they had gone to D.C. and effectuated the paperwork that they needed to do there, we'd be doing that. And that's exactly what we're doing in this case with common law marriage. And that's why I think we do need to look to D.C.
law. Another issue with respect to Clodderhouse. Clodderhouse can be read as identifying one factor as preeminent. They only looked at cohabitation and holding themselves out briefly. But cohabitation as being preeminent. And I'm not sure that we want to adopt a position that says by cohabitation alone, you can establish common law marriage. And Clodderhouse can be read almost to that extent, I think.
Your Honor, I do again have to respectfully disagree. And this, I think, maybe I'm running out of my time here.
You can do it later.
I'll address it now since I have it. When you talked about the public policy, I think what Clodderhouse also states, it doesn't just say all we need to have is cohabitation. In all of these cases, you must have this mutual present assent to be married. And to tie in with your public policy, and I think a ruling in this case that says that these parties did cohabit.
They had a marriage ceremony. That's all they had was a marriage ceremony and no cohabitation in Clodderhouse. Okay.
Exactly, Your Honor.
Well,
but they also they weren't evaluating this for whether they had cohabitation. They were evaluating it for whether their whether the time that they spent together was sufficient to establish reputation, which was needed to establish the mutual assent, Your Honor.
Got it.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Valerie Hughes for the appellee, Eileen Porter. The appellant has not presented one case from D.C. or elsewhere that supports a common law marriage between prior non-cohabiting, non-resident, one-time contact parties who held a wedding and one overnight in D.C. And that's because there are no cases.
The case that he presents in reference to the Maryland couple that sojourns or travels up to Pennsylvania, how impactful should that be in reference to our understanding of the common law?
It's very different, Your Honor, than this case. He's mixing together Crane versus Puller and Blaw Knox versus Morris, which the Crane mentioned, the Morris. In Crane versus Puller, the parties lived together in D.C. for 7 years, and it ruled that it was consummated by cohabitation. In Morris, they lived together for 38 years. They had 6 children. They had wedding rings. They celebrated an anniversary. Everyone in their family knew that they were married. They went to Pennsylvania for a two-day funeral, and everyone there was their family and friends had never known them as anything else but married. Therefore, that cohabitation that came for 38 years is what convinced the court that 2 days or even one in Pennsylvania would be enough.
Let me ask you about your initial comment, though. Washington, D.C. does recognize common law marriage.
Yes, sir.
Right?
Yes, sir.
So where do we look to determine what constitutes common law marriage in D.C.?
Common law marriage in D.C. is in Hogue says that you have to have words of the present tense, which they certainly did, and that the marriage must be consummated by cohabitation as husband and wife in that form.
What does cohabitation mean, though? Where is that to be informed? Because there's no case law in D.C. in reference to that. There's divorce law that defines cohabit. Are we to look there, or where are we to get the term what cohabit means?
Well,
what is the length of
duration? Let me do it for the court in 3 different jurisdictions. In D.C., the Peterson case says that while sex is not everything, sex is a part of the cohabitation. In Virginia, Eldred versus Eldred, which sets out our public policy, basically, says that Virginia case held that the repute of cohabitation must be contemporaneous with the declaration of marriage. The parties must have reputation and cohabitation at the time of the words, not after. If cohabitation is partial or irregular, the presumption of marriage fails. And this court was also mentioning the Kentucky case, which is Damron, Kennedy versus Damron. And in that case, the court said, one moment, Your Honor, I'm sorry. The court said that the parties would have to live together as they had to have an abode, they had to have a home, that marriage is intimately connected to a home and an abode, that marital duties of a relationship of husband and wife are inseparable from the home, the reputation must come from established home in the same abode where they can be identified by the community. I'd like to point out with the Porters, they had never lived together, they came into D.C., they had this wedding, and then they had a reception. Then they went to this hotel that was not connected to either one and checked in as husband and wife, just like the Kelder houses did. No one in that hotel knew whether they'd said words or not words. They didn't have sex. And then the next day, they had no intention of living together. One went to his house. She went to her house. They did not move in together for 3 months. The living together in Virginia, as Judge Bellows said, cannot be the evidentiary basis for cohabitation in D.C.
But if D.C. doesn't give us a time frame as to what cohabit means, and Mr. Shai's point is that it is a common law marriage under D.C. because they held themselves out to be husband and wife, which I think is conceded by the ceremony, and the fact that cohabitation is not defined solely by sexual relation, that in and of itself, whether it's for a duration of a day or longer, is enough. I know that the other cases that he's cited talk about a period of time where the couples have been together living or cohabitating for an extensive period of time, but I think his point is the time frame, whether it's expansive or not, doesn't matter. It's just the period of being together in that jurisdiction.
Let me point out, Your Honor, that there is no case that exists in D.C. that has one night. It does not exist because that doesn't make a marriage under their second prong, so it's never been litigated there.
Is there be a common law marriage recognized in any of the jurisdiction in which this couple traveled to or spent time in?
This couple?
This couple.
I'm not aware of any, Your Honor, except...
Would it be recognized in D.C.?
Now? If they lived together, if they had lived together for a number of times...
Are the facts of this case sufficient to establish a common law marriage in D.C.?
Absolutely not.
The reason I ask is that if that were the case, Virginia has some law that says Virginia will recognize it. Now, there is a caveat, but Virginia does recognize common law marriages that are valid in other states.
Absolutely.
All right, so that's my question. Is there any state that would recognize this couple's marriage under the facts as we know them?
Your Honor, I do not believe that there is any state that would, and when I was looking at the out-of-state cases, there are so many cases that, so many places, New Jersey, Illinois, Utah, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Oregon, Washington, Kentucky, Montana, Kansas, and Minnesota, and those are just the ones I went through, they say no, one night is not enough. You have to show that you've lived.
But it seems to me that the living together, the period of time that they reside together, is really evidence of their intent to consider themselves to be married. And here we have ample evidence of their intent to be husband and wife. So why do we care whether they spent any time in Washington, D.C., or whether it took them 3 months to actually move in together? Their intent is manifest in Washington, D.C.
Their intent is manifest, but their cohabitation is not. They have no reputation with anyone, including the hotel
but
clerk.
But isn't the cohabitation and the reputation, isn't that simply evidence of their intent?
No. The D.C. law has two prongs to it. One is the words, the intent, which they did, and the other is cohabitation and reputation. And one of the cases in D.C. actually says, in this jurisdiction, Coates v. Watts says cohabitation must be in this jurisdiction. Travers v. Reinhart, which is a Supreme Court case he cites, they moved to New Jersey, then it ripened. Thomas v. Murphy, they continue to live in D.C. after she's divorced. Perella moved to D.C. and lived together. Dickey lived in D.C. for 3 years. And the one that just happened a couple years ago, Spellman v. Bowman, it was a same-sex situation. They had lived together, but then one of them moved to Delaware. But they kept coming back and visiting the other one, and they said that partner from Delaware had significant enough nexus and contact with D.C. that he should have expected to be hailed into D.C. as a common law marriage.
So as I understand your argument, it's essentially that the nexus, in order for it to be common law marriage in D.C., has to be with D.C. in terms of the cohabitation.
Absolutely. And there was no cohabitation. There was a overnight with no sex, asleep in a hotel room, a less than a 24-hour period. And the reason you're not going to find a D.C. case on that is because they don't exist. And if you look, I hate to bring up International Shoe, don't sigh, but it does...
You might get a chuckle rather than a sigh.
It does define minimum contacts, and Shoe says that a single isolated activity in a state is not enough to subject a person to that forum. So if this single isolated activity can't subject them to the forum, then a single isolated overnight cannot either. And I will tell you, in Virginia public policy... Virginia has not had common law for 150 years. But if they're going to take it, then they say that they must have reputation and cohabitation at the time of the words. And further, what they laid out in Offiel versus Davis is by adhering to our statutory provisions, and the parties are forcibly impressed with the idea that they are forming a relationship in which society has an interest and which this state is a party. These parties did not adhere to the statutory provisions of Virginia. As a matter of fact, the minister wrote a fraudulent county.
Well, I don't think it's being contested about the validity of the actual ceremonial marriage.
Well, you wanted to know public policy was one of the questions. They didn't adhere to our statutory provisions. They didn't perform the necessary cohabitation for which D.C. society would have had an interest. And they made our state a party to a marriage that's not supported by law and fact. They had no intention of cohabiting in D.C.
I mean, you keep bringing up sexual relations. Suppose a party, you know, evidences an intent to be viewed as a married couple. They live together, but for whatever reason, they engage in no sexual relationship. Are they not common law married because of that one fact?
No. There are other indicia of a marriage in D.C. and Virginia and in all of these other areas. A marriage, living as husband and wife in a marital union, means cleaning, cooking, sleeping together, groceries, opening an account, paying taxes.
But it goes to what I said. If you look at what is the obverse of marriage, let's say divorce, but there are other categories of relationship that might give us some indicia. It's clear what Virginia thinks needs to exist, and part of it is what you're saying.
And one night,
when that all ends, the cooking, the cleaning, the whatever, and the cohabitation, and it's cohabitation and the disloyalty, and you can go on and on with that one, you don't have a marriage. We just then legally recognize that with a divorce. But the marriage itself ends by virtue of the conduct of the parties first. You can't get a divorce if the conduct doesn't conform to what we say is necessary to say. There is no marriage.
Absolutely.
So you can look at it that way. A little bit more complicated and challenging, but
Kleinfield says, and it's a Virginia case, says that you have to determine this by the law in the place where the marriage was contracted, which they're claiming is D.C. And then you can apply Virginia public policy as well as all these other state laws.
So what else would you say, looking at it from the reverse, what are the factors that should constitute marriage, common law?
In Virginia, it's a slippery slope. What would constitute common law in Virginia is first there would have to be the words, "You're my husband, I'm your wife," and then they would have to move in together. Residency, not necessarily domicile at the time, but they have to live together for a period of time as husband and wife where they are performing marital duties for each other and holding themselves out as husband and wife in the public in our jurisdiction. And I tell you, Virginia, if a couple is allowed to completely avoid the laws in our state, run to a permissive jurisdiction, set up a wedding with some friends and a party, spend the night, and run back into our jurisdiction and say, "I'm now married and Virginia needs to give me all the benefits of Virginia law because I was able to circumvent this," then that means that Virginia would be supporting anyone to just, why would you get a license? You run out for the day.
That was the purpose of a Las Vegas wedding.
Well, it's a slippery slope because if common law is allowed to run out of a non-permissive state to a permissive one and come back the next day without ever having lived in the jurisdiction, been a resident, no matter how short, done anything of marital duties whatsoever except sign a logbook at the hotel that says their husband, they didn't even book the hotel, their sister did. No one knew they were husband and wife. No one recognized them in the community in D.C. as a husband and wife doing duties together at all. And then they came back to Virginia, and eventually they started living together.
What period of time would they have to live together to be considered common law married?
In D.C.?
Yes.
They have to hold themselves out to have a reputation in the community. So I would say that they would have to have an abode where they were living and going out together in public, meeting people, introducing themselves at church.
Could we argue that a week is not enough, but a month is okay? I mean,
The shortest period of time in D.C. Was probably Vine versus Vine, and I'm going to give you this case. I only have a few seconds, but it's really important. It's a Maryland case that just came up. They got married in D.C. by a minister not qualified, and their license was no good. There are only 2 days in D.C. in their entire marriage of 9 years. However, the husband worked in D.C. He was a head of a company. They socialized heavily in D.C. They had a synagogue in D.C. They had a large community of friends. They filed D.C. taxes together. And so the court said, even though they only spent 2 nights there, their connection to D.C. was not an isolated incident. And I think that would be the best instruction for this court. There's not one case, and your law clerks will not, I'm sorry, I'm out of time, will not find one case that says that an overnight is satisfactory. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Stein, you're out of time, but we took up all your time with your rebuttal. I'm going to put a minute on. We're going to try to be good and let you just address your argument.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. I'm just going to use this last minute to do, Your Honor, is to put in context. I want you to imagine that the Porters, instead of leaving D.C. on the very next morning, Ms. Porter going back to Virginia, my client actually staying in D.C., let's say they had lived there for the first 5 years of their marriage. They cohabited there and then moved to Virginia, and we were trying to get divorced in Virginia. I think everyone would acknowledge that after 5 years of living together there, of cohabiting there, that they would be married. What would we think of as the date of marriage there? What would we go back to? We would, of course, go back to the date of their ceremony when they evinced that intent and when they started cohabiting with one another. Cohabiting, just like marriage, once you have established that you're doing it, you don't have to have it for a certain period of time. It's just like marriage, it's binary. When you have those two things in place, you are, in fact, married, and whether that lasts for a minute, a month, a year, or 10 years, it is still cohabiting.
Thank you, counsel. Come down and greet counsel.